Welcome to the Thomistic Institute podcast. Our mission is to promote the Catholic intellectual tradition in the university, the church, and the wider public square. The lectures on this podcast are organized by university students at Thomistic Institute chapters around the world. To learn more and to attend these events, visit us at thomisticinstitute.org.
So the subject of tonight's lecture is the art of conversation, broadly conceived. I think the lecture has a cool title, which may or may not have induced you to attend. Regardless, we're going to talk about the art of conversation, and I've arranged my comments under seven headings, the most memorizable of numbers, seven. And each of them are two words, because once I start with a trope, I kind of can't help myself, and I seek to fulfill the destiny which I have set. So the points are these. If you're the type of individual who likes writing notes, now might be a time for said activity. It matters. That's the first point. Don't worry. That's the second one. Take time. Draw near. Listen well. It gets confusing here at number six because I couldn't come up with something shorter. Elicit contributions. Sorry. And have fun. All right. So again, it matters. Don't worry. Take time. Draw near. Listen well. Elicit contributions. And have fun. And I'll talk for maybe like 34 minutes. And then we'll have maybe 15, 20 minutes for questions at the end. And then we'll be done at 8. But if you have further questions beyond that, you can feel free to ask them. And then I brought some, this lecture is based off a book that I wrote that's called Training the Tongue and Growing Beyond Sins of Speech. And I brought like some number of copies, however many I could carry without my arms breaking en route to the metro in Washington, D.C. So if you care to buy one, you're most welcome to, and I can sign it for you. Okay, it matters. I think sometimes when we envision the moral life, we focus on certain virtues. So for those of you who are Christian, we'll focus on faith, hope, charity. For those of you who are trying to live with some measure of integrity in a college setting, you might focus on like chastity and temperance. But the list typically ends right around there. There might be a couple of other things which we take into consideration. But then everything else we just kind of assign to temperament, constitution, whim, caprice, idiosyncrasy, whatever. So like let's say for instance that you're having a conversation with somebody who has poor oral hygiene. And that individual, like when he opens his mouth, it smells like a nursing home. You might say to yourself, gross, but you won't necessarily attribute it to him as a vice. You won't think about it as something that's like a failure in his moral formation. Whereas I would suggest to you that it may in fact be a vice. It may in fact be a failure in moral formation. The point of this isn't for me to like stand in judgment over ranks of people. The point is to say that we're responsible for cultivating our personalities, for cultivating our characters in such a way that we make life delightful for other people. So like Aristotle, for instance, in the Nicomachean Ethics, he starts talking about virtues which he thinks are pertinent to human formation. He mentions courage at the outset, and then he'll talk about temperance. And before too long, he's talking about things like wit. And you think to yourself, wit? You mean like humor is something for which I am responsible? I thought it was just like some people have it, some people don't have it. And if I don't have it, then I just try not to be like too negative Nancy, or I try not to be like, I don't know, too fun sucky, to make up an adjective which doesn't exist in the context of conversation, but like I'm kind of am who I am. That's not Aristotle's understanding. He thinks that you can actually cultivate wit, that you can become funny, or at the very least, that you can create an ambiance of laughter and enjoyment in your immediate company. So what I'm suggesting to you with this first point, it matters. The art of conversation matters. I think we're responsible for becoming at least decent conversationalists. So based on your temperament, your constitution, you might be inclined to distance yourself from conversation, to be more quiet, more taciturn, or you might be inclined to really get after it in conversation, perhaps even to dominate conversation. But we can't just say, I am who I am and everyone else need deal with it. We have to be attentive to the ways in which we can refine the art of conversation so that we can make life genuinely delightful, enjoyable for those with whom we share it. Okay, so that's the first point. It matters. Second point, don't worry. So sometimes again, like let's say for instance that you recently came to the practice of the faith. So your first, like, whatever, your first few months here of considering Christian conversion as, I don't know, like, it has a claim on you for the first time, and then you realize with a kind of, oof, burdensome dread responsibility that that leaves a lot to be done in your life. You're like, holy smoking Josephine, I'm really done much in this line for X number of months or X number of years. And now everything strikes you with a kind of like solemnity. You're like, oh my gosh, this is all very serious. So I'd say to you, don't worry. All right, don't worry. Sometimes we can actually tie ourselves in knots with respect to our moral formation. And it's especially so when we focus on sin or when we focus on vice. Okay, so like maybe you're new to the practice of the sacrament of confession. And you go there and you do a nice thorough examination of conscience. And it becomes a kind of occasion of auto-accusation as you list the various ways in which you have failed short or the various ways in which you have slid back into a retrograde activity or whatever it is. All right, and that for you becomes an occasion of deep sorrow. All right, a kind of lamentation, hatred for your sins, but one which burdens you, which really, yeah, just causes you great grief. Again, just to breathe some levity into your examination, some levity into the conversation, I just say don't worry. All right, don't worry. Oftentimes when people ask, like, for instance, about discerning a vocation, they'll say to themselves, you know, how do I go about this? What's the best way in which to do this? One thing that I commend to those who are discerning a vocation is, again, similar, don't worry. Because often the principal obstacle to discerning with some measure of freedom and levity of spirit is the anxiety that we experience by virtue of the fact that we're taking it so seriously. Obviously, you know, we can't just change our mentality at a moment's notice. But know this, you're meant to kind of relax into this decision. You're meant to kind of, as it were, slide into this decision. So when it comes to our efforts at cultivating moral excellence, I think we should focus more on the good things rather than on the bad things. Why do I say that? Well, the image that I'd like to use is that of tending a garden. Let's say that you have a garden, you're responsible for making that garden yield. And let's say that you set for your goal the elimination of all weeds. You have it in your mind that weeds can occupy that space, they can otherwise crowd out good growth. And so you dedicate yourself sedulously to identifying the weeds and then rooting them out. And let's say that you're really good at this. At the end of the day, all that you have is an empty garden. You're free to come in. All that you have is an empty garden, which, you know, we have a name for that, it's just a bunch of dirt. But if you set for your goal the cultivation of good growth, of beautiful things in the garden, all right, then that can actually draw out the native excellence at work in your life. That can actually animate you. You see people get pumped about doing that. People get super into horticulture. It's awesome. All right, and now mind you, weeds may still crop up in your life. But the fact of the matter is that if you have cultivated good growth, those weeds will be pushed to the periphery. They'll be easier to identify, and you can kind of pull them up in stride as you set your sights on something yet more edifying, yet more beautifying of that space. So the first is it matters. The second is don't worry. Here, we're not gonna worry so much about like rooting out sin as we will with like crowding out sin. All right, so when we take up for our exercise in moral improvement, something more, yeah, beautiful, wonderful, then yes, sin will go by the wayside. That's our intention. Okay, next is take time. I realize, yeah, maybe this point will sound something like the last point or somewhat similar to the last point. But the fact of the matter is that the art of conversation is something that you can work on over the whole course of your life. Because God's giving you the whole course of your life. As the psalmist says, 70 years or 80 for those who are strong. The next line in the psalm is, and most of them are emptiness and pain. So he's got a particular vision of how these years are to go. But nevertheless, know that you've got time. So sometimes I think we put inordinate pressure on ourselves to be excellent when we expect that perfect excellence of ourselves today or tomorrow. All right, God's not necessarily asking you to be perfect yesterday or even today or even tomorrow. He's asking of you that you trust Him to make you perfect in His way and in His time. But that means trusting that He has a plan for your life. That it's good, that it's enough, that He has beautiful things in store, wonderful things in store. Even if those things are, to you, at present, seemingly modest, all right, they might not be the grandiose things that you had in mind for yourself, But know that even in their hiddenness, even in their relative obscurity, they're precious, because they're precious to Him. So like, you're from Iowa, so you're crushing it. This is a problem that people on the East Coast deal with. Like, if you're not too good at conversation, which is not true for any of you, if you're not too good at conversation, don't worry. All right, you don't have to worry. Because there's some points at which, like, we find ourselves at a social situation, and it's just a source of affliction. You know, like, you get invited to a thing where you're not sure if you'll know anyone there. Do you guys have focus missionaries here? Yeah. Focus missionaries are always making, like, sweet invitations to come to sweet things. And you hear that, and you're like, ugh, maybe. Definitely maybe. Right? But then you, like, show up this thing, and it's at, like, the Catholic Center, so it's bound to be, like, a little bit strange, and you just don't know how you're going to fare. And then you're, like, looking around to see if there's somebody that you recognize, and you're like, thank God, there's a refreshment table over there. So I'm just going to, like, bop on over to the refreshment table and then awkwardly oscillate between the edge of a conversation and the refreshment table, and then eventually I'll leave. You know, it's like, don't worry. Take time. It's okay. Also, this is one of the reasons for which I think that the greatest thing that you can do in conversation is welcome another person. And this sounds like whatever. I don't know what it sounds like. It sounds like any number of things. But, like, you're having a conversation, it's like you, the crew, the squad, and maybe there are three of you, and you're, like, really deep in whatever Thomistic lore you like to chat through. You're like, all right, guys, but here's the thing about Prima Pars Question 23, Article 1 on divine predestination, all right? And you've been having this conversation over the... This guy's like, yeah, exactly. you've been having this conversation for, like, the last 7 months. And then you feel somebody over your shoulder, and it's like, this noob doesn't know the first thing about divine providence, you know? He doesn't even know how to locate it in the Summa. That is not a good evaluation to make at the moment. You should always be ready to roll the shoulder. You know, like that feeling when you enter a party and you're like, I don't know anyone here. And then somebody immediately makes eye contact. In their eyes, for whatever reason, they communicate that you are the light of their world, like the light of their life, and you're like, ooh. I didn't know I was so delightful. And then they, like, draw you into a conversation, introduce you to a person with a mutual interest. It's like, hey, you're studying mechanical engineering. This guy's studying mechanical engineering. He had this cool internship with Lockheed Martin. He was working on satellite payloads. You know, it was wild. Traveling wave tube amplifiers, am I right? Totally insane. And then all of a sudden, you're deeply engrossed in a cool conversation as to how much leakage there is in waveguide and coax. And you're like, this night couldn't be better, right? So, I don't know if that's ever happened to you. but you can offer people a welcome into conversation. This is all just a wow, blah, blah, a strange expounding upon the point that you've got time, that life takes time, and moral maturation takes time. And you needn't expect from yourself today the types of things which will often unfold tomorrow, next week, next month, etc. That doesn't mean that, like, we foreclose on the possibility of growth, or that we default on the graces that God is giving us to grow, but it means that our perfectionism has to be tempered with the recognition that God loves our destiny more than we do, all right? And He's working more avidly for the fulfillment of our destiny than we are. So we need to be able to, as Philadelphia 76ers fans like to say, trust the process. I know of no Iowa State folks who came to the Sixers in recent years, so I would make that connection, but I can't, alas. I mean, like, Philadelphia Eagles, Cooper DeJean, but he's an Iowa boy, so sorry. Okay, moving on. I think we can, never mind. Okay, keep going. So, take time. Moral maturation takes time, and that's a good thing. All right, that's a good thing, because it's a decidedly human thing. Because as a human being, you are made on the way and not at the end, and that's part of the adventure. We're going to talk about adventure in our last point, our seventh point. But part of the adventure is that you get to live your life. Which, like, I start sounding like a motivational speaker up here. It's like, yes. there's this, like, crazy guy in a dress, and he was pumping us up, and he kept talking about Jesus. It was insane. You have a whole life to live. You have a whole life. Sometimes we wish we could skip certain parts of it that prove unsavory or otherwise difficult, but you have a whole life to live. And, that's good news. Okay, keep going, Gregory. So, fourth point, draw near. This is the most substantive point, like a good writer of sacred scripture. I have nestled it right at the middle of the book. If you're ever wondering what's most important about a book of the Bible, it's the stuff that's right at the beginning and stuff that's right at the middle. Book of Exodus, what comes at the middle? The giving of the law. Let's go. Okay, so this is my most significant point. He looks around to create dramatic effect. Namely, draw near. So the point of conversation is not to win. The point of conversation is not to display your surpassing knowledge of some very small kernel of trivial facts. The point of conversation is to draw near. I think that's the point of it. Okay, back it up, Father Gregory. Substantiate your point. Thank you for that invitation. Okay. So why do I think that? Because I think that's the point of human life. So we are embodied spirits or inspirited bodies, depending on how you want to parse that. So we live at the horizon of creation, which is a strange place to occupy because everything below us doesn't have that spiritual component and everything above us doesn't have that bodily component. We alone live in this silly liminal space. Okay, so we have spirits and our aspirations range all of the way to heaven. Okay, so like, yeah, we think about heaven, which is wild. Like we think about life forever with God. It might not be especially concrete. It might not be especially well developed, but nevertheless, we have desires which cannot be satisfied here. We have desires which are, as it were, infinite, which is crazy. Nevertheless, they're wed to a body, which makes life really silly. I'm about to overshare, so sorry. 2 years ago, I was at the Sikh in Washington, D.C., which people were calling Squeak because it was small by comparison. I guess it's only like 14, 15 months ago, but I was at Squeak. And it was only 4 days long, and I was like, this is going to be awesome. It'll be one day fewer, and I'll feel much better at the end, instead of feeling like I was repeatedly hit with a 2x4. Which, whatever, keep going. So I showed up the first night, I'm like, I am ready to chat. And then I went home that night, and I had like something strange go on with my body, and I couldn't sleep, and I just felt totally, totally terrible. Turns out I had like some combination of COVID and the flu. So I showed up the next day, I was like, I dragged my barely animate corpse to the podium and I was like, here are things about Jesus. And then I was like, I will definitely sleep tonight because I did not sleep last night. And I had like another little talk to give the next day of a less significant sort. So I went to bed and I was like, oh, this is going great. I'm falling asleep and it's only 9:37 p.m. And then at 1 in the morning, I woke up and I said, ooh, I think I have about like 6 seconds to get to the bathroom. And that's how things went for the next 8 hours, all right? But it's hard to find a pinch hitter, and I had to give a talk. Fortunately, I live in an intergenerational community, and we have a fully supplied medicine cabinet with like things that you can take for your stomach slash other parts of your body, and also like certain forms. I wore a diaper, okay? So here we go. I showed up at Sikh, and I'm like, serious person talking about serious things. And people are like, Father Gregory, I have a question for you about divine predestination. I'm like, I am interested. And my inside thought in all these conversations was, I'm wearing a diaper. So like, we as human beings have these aspirations which range all the way to heaven, and yet our bodies keep us very close to earth. All right? And it makes for all of these hilarious and silly encounters. Which sometimes, you know, we lament. We wish, you know, like that we were mere beasts. Like, I wish I didn't have to think about these grandiose plans of God. Or we wish that we were angels. Like, I wish I didn't have to experience my emotional life. It's so bizarre. I can't even get, yeah, whatever. So, but here we are at the horizon of creation. And I think that part of what's privileged about occupying this space is that while our bodies keep us at a certain distance, on account of the fact that our bodies mediate our spiritual life, they can actually become a privileged place of encounter and a real occasion for sharing. All right, so I'm like thinking all of these wild things in semi-chaotic fashion. The people of God are like, mm-hmm. And in order to communicate them to you, I have to concretize them in words and phrases with like wild intonations and bizarro world hand gestures. But in so doing, I can actually impart to you something of my spiritual life. And you can take that up into your spiritual life, such that we, in a wild way, can think the same thoughts and share the same affections, like the same ones. And that's just you and me. The fact of the matter is that we can enjoy that with God. You've heard it said that we're made to the image and likeness of God. There are many ways in which to describe that phenomenon. But the fact of the matter is that we have a mind with which to know and a heart with which to love, and that we can play host to God, which is to say we can know God with his own knowledge of himself and we can love him with his own love of himself, such that we can come to a kind of confluence of thought and affection with God. You can think God's thoughts. You can experience God's affections. Your heart can beat in time with his. But he's willed that it pass through the body, that you encounter him through faith and sacrament. He says, if you're going to get to know me, you're going to have to like show up at church and like stand, sit, stand, kneel, stand, kneel, stand, walk, return, kneel, depending on how long, you know, it's just hard to say, and then kneel, and then it's just, you're gonna have to do all that. Like, that's how you're gonna get to know me. That's how you're gonna think my thoughts. That's how you're going to experience my affections. God has wed himself to the physical world precisely so that we can meet him in it and commune with him in his spiritual life. And conversation is the ordinary means whereby persons who experience this phenomenon come together. Okay, that's the whole point. That's the thing that I wanted to communicate to you. We can actually share our spiritual lives. I'm worried that my microphone is like rubbing on my thing because I'm hearing stuff in the room. Okay, so we can actually share our lives. So the point of a conversation is to come together. That's the point of a conversation. It's not to win, all right? It's not to demonstrate our surpassing knowledge of the trivial facts in one corner of reality. It's to come together. That's the point. Okay, so my next three points are basically a way by which to unpack that. It is hard to share your life, okay? It is hard to share your life. Because it's like, regardless of how tough you are and how little you care about what other people think about you, we'd prefer not to for the most part, all right? Because there's a certain secrecy which is proper to the solitude which we each experience, all right? And then we're also worried that we're gonna get hurt. You know, we talk about being vulnerable. The word vulnerable, you know, means just, it just means woundable. That's the basic notion. That's the basic idea. And so we find it difficult to share, even with the promise of coming together, even with the promise of this confluence of thought and affection, because we're worried that we'll be exposed. We're worried that we'll be ridiculed. We're worried that we'll be shamed. We're worried that we'll be wounded. So I think the first thing that you can do in a conversation is listen well. All right, the first thing that you can do in a conversation is listen well, because you actually generate space in which for the person to be vulnerable and to share. A lot of times we have it in our minds that like listening is just kind of wasted time or dead time. That's decidedly false. A good listener can actually generate the person with whom he or she is speaking. Like, you know a good listener, and that's just, it's such a treat to speak with a good listener and to have the opportunity to listen well to that individual. Because we've all been in conversations, you know, where like the other person is speaking and you're just thinking what you're going to say in return, and then you launch your salvo, and then that person is clearly just thinking about what he's going to say in return. And at the end of the day, it's just a verbal contest. No communion has been realized. Instead, we've just gone back and forth demonstrating our competence. To what end? Who knows? But when someone listens well, that person says, "You are welcome here. Like, you're welcome in this place, you're welcome in my life." And that's awesome. That is so precious. Holy smokes, good listeners are so precious. So in conversation, you can listen well, and you can create a space in which for the other to be vulnerable, such that he or she finds it easier to share, thus making possible the communion which is afforded to you as fellow citizens of the earth. How am I doing? Still, I'm staring here a lot of things. Everything's off. I'm just going to hold this in front of my face. No, we'll do this. A little readjust. Man, this thing is so live, it's incredible. All right, here we go. Look at that guy. Whew. All right, sixth point, elicit contributions. So I think that conversation is effectively performative communion. All right, conversation is effectively performative communion. The answer to this microphone problem is like move around less, but I just can't help myself. My mother was Italian. It's like, yeah. Okay, so conversation is performative communion. Actually, if you have a handheld?
Yes.
Yes. Dude, the recording for this is so ruined. Like, Father Gregory was laughing like a pirate at one point. Things got out of control. All right, we're good. Okay, everything's awesome. Okay, so conversation is performed. This is why I think there's always room for small talk in conversation. Sometimes we don't like small talk because it seems like dumb. It's like, bro, I'm not into small talk. I just get right to the goods. Tell me your deepest, darkest secret. It's like, whoa, things really heated up there. Because at the end of the day, we can only share what we have to share. And you can only share what you're willing to present in the conversation, and you can only commune with what the other person is willing to present in the conversation. And if you try to reach for something that at present is not available to you, you're going to spook the individual. And I think that's actually indiscreet. It's a kind of invasion of that person's solitude. We all have a right to a certain solitude in which we can meet the Lord, because there are spaces in our life in which we can Yeah, really only commune with the Lord because they're His. So I think that what we're doing in conversation, what we're doing with small talk, is performing our communion as it is available to us at present. So I don't know a lot of things about Iowa. I don't pretend to know a lot of things about Iowa. But like, I might try to pepper them into the talk and be like, hey, your state is like kind of rectangular, but like, not like in a Kansas way, you know, am I right? You know, so it's like, look at us, you know, we're doing the thing that we both know. You know, it's like, you just do what you can with what you have, because once your lips get moving, then your heart start warming, and then you are better disposed to share in a more substantive way. Because when you discover that that mechanical engineer did that internship at Lockheed Martin in their space systems company, and that you did your internship at Northrop Grumman in like avionics, you're like, you also have an avionics division. I watched a bunch of videos about the Joint Strike Fighter, and it was like totally wild. And then I went to Udvar-Hazy, and they actually had F-35s, and it was nuts, because I was like, isn't this classified? And people were certainly taking a lot of photos of that action. You know, so like, it gives you things about which to talk, not just because you want to fill space, but because you want to actually come into possession of a common life. Because you can actually think the same thoughts, because you can actually experience the same affections, because that's what we're made for. Because we're conjugal animals, social animals, political animals, we're meant to commune. All right, the man who lives apart, says Aristotle, is one of two things. He's either a beast or a god. All right, we're meant to live together. It's not a sign of weakness. It's not a sign of woundedness. It's a sign of our nature. It's how we're meant to be fulfilled. So if you've said to yourself, like, hey, I have everything that I could hope for at present, except for a husband, and I'm really sad, that doesn't make you a needy woman. It doesn't make you a broken toy. It makes you human. It makes you human. And you can say that and still recognize that a man won't complete you. And I can then go into a little theological explanation of how God can complete you. Let's spare that for the moment and just say simply, we're made for each other. So it's totally appropriate that we experience some measure of alienation and isolation and hate that. That in our relationships, we experience some measure of distance and want to bridge that. That we want to actually be with because we feel ourselves so often at a distance. And even like in our text conversations, if for whatever reason the cadence is slightly off and the individual is taking longer than she ordinarily does to respond, we get all in our heads and think like, what does this mean? And then we start hyper-measuring our responses and then become totally stilted and we oscillate between ghosting and clinging for the next 17 hours and we feel like a rumbling wreck of broke-down humanity. That's totally normal because we're made for communion. So conversation affords us the opportunity to perform the very thing for which we are made as human beings, which is, okay, here we go. So then, in conversation, what are we meant to do? We're meant to elicit contributions for each other for which we're made. All right, some of us are going to be more quiet, more taciturn, more shy, more reserved. That's fine. Some of us are going to be more ebullient, kind of more over the top, more in the ring, and that's fine. But the fact of the matter, the fact of the matter is this. Each person should know that he or she is welcome, that he or she has a place, a part to play, and that they can contribute something to the communion which at present is on offer. So we should strive to avoid imbalance. That doesn't mean that we should be like counting the percentages that each person in the conversation spoke. It's like, there are four of us. You have been speaking 18%, you are underrepresented. You have been speaking 35%, you are decidedly overrepresented. Why does this person sound like Donald Trump? we don't have to get into the calculus, but we should be sensitive to people's moods, to people's tempers, to people's relative degrees of fatigue and distraction, so that we can draw them into a verbal adventure in which we can discover each other and share our life and be on the way towards God, okay? So then, maybe just like last thing, have fun. Okay, have fun. These are my 7 points. I'm going to review them for you, for those of you who care. It matters. Don't worry. Take time. Draw near. Listen well. Elicit contributions. And then have fun. There is no agenda for most conversations. If there were an agenda, it would feel weird. All right? So like when somebody comes into a conversation with an over-curated notion as to what need be accomplished by that conversation, it's like, bruh, isn't how that works. Because part of what's exciting about human life is that we are figuring it out as we go. Now we know how it ends. Jesus Christ suffered and died for love of us. He shed his blood that we need not experience the alienation and isolation of sin and vice, but that we can abide with him forever in heaven, which is decidedly good news. So you know that the distance has been bridged, that the alienation has been overcome, that the gap has been closed, that Christ has drawn near. But it remains as yet for us to draw near to him, and the way that we do it is with each other. That is how God has chosen for us to advance by small progressive stages to him, together. All right? So we're not just like a bunch of Ubermenschen, like supermen and women, in relative splendid isolation, like priding ourselves on our independence and non-reliance. We're meant to depend, we're meant to rely, we are meant to come together. And what opens out before us is a genuine adventure. Adventure. I'm like struggling to pronounce things. A genuine adventure. So like, I talk a lot about the virtue of prudence because this is this totally cool virtue which got done a bad deed in the 20th century and now everyone thinks about it as like caution and circumspection. It's like kind of aversion to financial outlets. Like, I would do that except it would be imprudent. It's like, shut up, all right? The most prudent thing in the world is to get into the ring and to live your life. And you don't have to do so with like swaggering bravado. You can do so with meekness, with humility, with simplicity of heart. But the fact of the matter is that it's your life to live, that God has entrusted you with your life because he's genuinely excited to see what you'll make of it. Okay, so it's not as if there is like one pre-scripted end to human life and you are responsible for discerning it with dread anxiety until such time as God deems that you have suffered sufficiently and then relents and then infuses into your mind a kind of knowledge packet as to what will transpire for the next 70 years of your life. That's totally insane. That's totally creepy too. Okay? So like, for instance, people are like, what should I do with my, people don't ask me that because they're like, that guy's too unhinged to ask serious questions to. But when people theoretically, we'd ask an individual theoretically, what ought one do in his or her life? My response is like, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? Provided that you're praying, making good use of the sacraments, introducing some penance into your life, engaging in Christian friendship, studying the faith, serving the material poor, you can trust that God is going to heal you and grow you such that you are fit to live your life, such that you are fit to choose, such that your desires converge with his because you've begun to think the same thoughts and to experience the same affections because you've been doing that within the setting of the Christian community for however many months and years, and it's become, as it were, second nature. All right? So there aren't prescripted ends for which you are responsible as if you had to wrest them from God's unwilling grasp. God is willing, but what he bestows upon you, what he blesses you with, is your freedom. And you get to play with that. You get to have fun with that. And the proving ground, or the playground, is the art of conversation. So that's my encouragement to you. May it be your prayer for me as well. Thanks for your attention.
Thanks for listening to this lecture on the Thomistic Institute podcast. The generosity of people like you makes this podcast possible. If you enjoy these talks, please consider showing your support at www.thomisticinstitute.org/donate. Your donation of even a dollar helps us reach more college students and many others with the powerful truths of the faith, and it ensures that we can keep publishing top-notch lectures on this podcast. Thanks a lot.